are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We can also be heard on the web, and all our shows are downloaded and posted on our Sita Media website. Ellen Little, my co-host, will tell you all, our dear listeners, how to retrieve all those shows and tune in online.
That's right. So you can tune in online on 1510wwbc.com. You just hit that on-demand button. You might have to download a little something, but for the most part, you should be able to just hit that and listen to us live every Monday at 1 p.m. here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And also, you can go to sitamediainc.com, and all of the shows are downloadable right there. You'll see the on-demand button. You'll also see a little blogs going across with pictures and so forth. You can get it there as well. And Sita has fantastic guests over the last 10 years that we've had the show. So we've got archives of all of those shows. So, and a couple of folks are doubled up.
Yes.
A couple shows are doubled up. So it's nice to see the history of how people have evolved over the shows.
And make sure our show has been taped today, because last week our guest, the attorney, Philip Aurora, he would like his Dutch show. He would like to listen to it and share it with his friends. So every Monday, Ellen and I sit here in the studio and we heat up the airwaves with what we call kitchen table topics. We talk about things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida, and we talk about things that are going on all over the world. And today is no different. My friend Tiki Fiol is here. And she's going to be talking in the second segment about something that it's near and dear to a lot of us right now. We're trying to figure out people's behaviors and how environment changes our behaviors for the best. So she'll be talking about that in the second segment. And on our first segment, we have a gentleman here whose name is David Jones, and he is the CFO of Diversity of Thought, which is a learning and development and developmental consultant firm. But before we go to David, you could say hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Right? So, Ellen, of course, everybody knows our show is fun. It's unscripted. It's very educational and quite informative at times. And we sit here as though we own this studio, like it's a part of our extension of our living rooms, and we chat with people on Mondays, correct?
That is too so true. And you have some fantastic guests, like I pointed out before.
Right. And so I'm going to ask you really quick. Last week you weren't here and we missed you.
Thank you.
How was your week?
My week was good. Music is picking up, so that means that the economy seems to be, even though things are a little crazy on the news, out in public, people seem to be behaving a little bit.
Right.
So at least in the channels and the circles that I'm in, everybody seems to be happy that the election is over, regardless of whether their person won or not. I think everybody was just sort of newsed out.
Right.
So the week was good.
Well, I celebrated the Indian holiday of Diwali.
Yes.
It's a festival of lights, good over evil, light over darkness. It's a time for reflection, and it's a time to get together with family and friends and offer our thoughts and our prayers for our friends and family all over the world, and of course right here in Brevard as well. And I did that, and I went to the Hindu temple, did wear my mask. My children came home. We had a wonderful time for Diwali. And you're absolutely correct. But you know, I have to tell you, the politics is not over as yet until we hear a concession.
No, absolutely.
As far as I'm concerned, we need to hear a concession speech that unites the nation. Because, you know, so many people voted for President Trump. Over 71.9 million people voted for him. And they're very loyal and they're very passionate. And they have to work through their own very turbulent emotions. in the wake of his loss, people are grieving. There's shock, there is anger, there's people are expressing all sorts of emotions. And the only way for those emotions to come to a screeching halt and everyone take a sigh of relief is when the president, the current president of the United States, concede and give a speech about unity and how to move this great country forward. We don't have to agree on everything, but we can certainly be civil and we could try to be respectful.
Absolutely. You know, we have to be. Finally, I mean, we've been trying for the last year, right? Everybody's, the civility of everyone has been a little challenged. The emotion of everyone's been a little challenged. So it's great to have these two great guests here to talk about that and hopefully maybe shed some light to our listening audience who may be wondering some of the same things that we're wondering, seeing the same things posted on Facebook, seeing the same rallies in the streets, wondering where they fit.
We hear people say all lives matter, right? Well, guess what? All votes matter as well.
Everything matters.
So, you know what? So I think at this point, I heard they were recounting the votes in Georgia by hand. Like, why? Really? Really? Come on, concede and let's move on. But anyways, that's just my CETA social for today. Concede and move on. And so we're going to go to right over to David Jones. So David, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're titled that. Diversity of thought, it's very catchy, but I'm sure there's a meaning to it.
Yes, so I came back to Brevard a few years ago. I grew up here in Brevard County.
Just like then, Tiki, she did as well.
Oh, see, there we go.
Right, you grew up in Brevard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Okay, and Tiki, I don't know if you're like me. I was that, I grew up and said, I'm getting out of here and I'm never coming back. And then it's Brevard, so of course you end up back in Brevard. But I'm really happy to be back here. I love this county. And while I was gone, my job, I oversaw the learning and development for Best Buy for the southeast of the country. And because of that, they invested a lot of learning and development into me to be able to pass on to the employees, to the leaders, to the agents around many a topics. And some of those topics were diversity, equity, and inclusion, having purpose beyond making money. You know, just it was an amazing experience for me. And when I came back, I said, hey, I want to bring that back into my community. How can I do that for local businesses here where I live? And unfortunately, what happened with George Floyd happened, and then the conversation around diversity, equity, and inclusion expanded. So I started getting a lot more phone calls as of lately.
Well, you know, knowledge is power, right?
Yes.
And so you came back with this, all this knowledge, and you said, well, I'm going to share it in Brevard, because we all hear, you know, motivational speakers always say, find your purpose in life. Live a life that's worth something. Yeah. But sometimes some of us find that something and we say, how can I share it? And I think a lot of people do have a lot of knowledge and they don't share it. So I commend you for coming back to Brevard and help and trying to help here. Yeah. So you said after the George Floyd incident, a lot of people called you. What were they calling you to talk about?
So the company is Diversity of Thought, Inc. How we came up with that is because I do believe that diversity goes beyond the look, feel, like, and all those things. It's also about how we think and see things and how we exist. And as we were thinking of a company's name, Diversity of Thought came into mind, and then the ink went on there because my grandmother's nickname was Dottie, and we said this must be fortuitous because it spells out Dottie, so we just rolled with it. And what we try to do is give people the knowledge and the skill set to change the world around them.
Yeah. So what kind of programs do you offer? How can someone benefit from your diversity of thought?
So we do have some diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that are specific in that realm. We have one that's called Inclusion Starts With I. We typically try to have people start with inclusion because then you understand what's so important. You can work on diversity all you want to, but if your inclusion efforts are wrong, your environment is wrong, the diversity really is not going to matter, to be honest with you. So it's how do you get the environment right? So we start with inclusion, then we take them through equity, and then we focus on the diversity. We will be offering a program here in Brevard County called Psychological Safety next year, where there's a safety assessment. The safety assessment is pretty cool. You can learn what triggers, what's the motivating factor that triggers your behavior, whether it's security, autonomy, trust, fairness, or esteem. And then how do you mitigate the biases that are triggering you to go and operate in that space? Then a couple other programs that we offer, just purpose-driven leadership. It's a cool program. It's more of a consulting class that we do with organizations. And then we also do facilitation skills. So my job was to also train trainers how to be trainers. And in the world that we live in today, everybody has become a facilitator. At some point, you're going to be on Zoom and talking in front of a group of people. How do we get people to feel more confident, dynamic, and competent in facilitating? We got like 5 really cool tips for individuals that we walk them through, and we have a lot of fun. So the one thing I will guarantee is if you go with us for any program, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know, it's interesting that you said that because oftentimes people know exactly which buttons to push on a person to trigger them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like I know for me, if someone says anything about the Democrats, it's a button, and I feel like I have to pick that up and run with it and say something. So you're right. I mean, it's just triggers, right?
Well, so, and we put ourselves out there so much to let people know what our triggers are. All I have to do is follow your Facebook page, and I know exactly what triggers.
Yes,
exactly right. I was just going to say that. We have been so all of us have become transparent almost.
Yes.
From that perspective. Like, we know what sets somebody off, and we know what makes somebody cry, and we know, you know.
It's as if we're doing the marketing company's job for them.
They say artificial intelligence. Yeah, it's not artificial.
Well, you know, social media is actually a reflection of yourself. People, sometimes somebody says, well, you put up a post and you get so many likes. Can you just share my stuff on your wall? I'm like, no, because I know what mood I'm in, and I'd put something political, and then I'll put something personal, and then I'll put something fun, and I follow myself that way, right? But sometimes I go to Facebook or some other social media site, and I'll see people that I know who are extremely wealthy, well, you know, here in the community. Maybe an attorney, maybe a doctor, maybe an engineer, maybe just a regular housewife or who, whatever. And I would see something that they post about how they feel about, you know, the Second Amendment. And I'm like, really? You're advocating for guns so that Democrats can't say something positive about why we should have background checks? And then I'm like, it changes my mind about that person. But like you say, it's the messaging. Like, you're looking at their feed and you're like, really? You think that way about background checks? So how do we message what we want to say to the public in a way that we don't really put ourselves out too much, but we get our messaging out?
I think that because there's the collective of if you're a D or an R, and I always joke, I said, whichever gang you are in, because that's how they operate. So whichever color you're flying, you're either all of what they believe or none of what they believe. And that mentality is what's become significantly dangerous. I was doing a session with a group here, and you know, my job is to create the environment where people feel free and open to have honest conversation, because these conversations are difficult to have in public. And the conversation led to a gentleman saying, when I drive by all of these houses in my neighborhood that have Trump and Pence signs, the first thing I think is, by God, they're racist. And is it okay to think that? Which is great, because then they look at me for the answer, and I'm like, hey, I'm not here. That's not what my job
but
is.
But they're not. Really, they're not. But you hit the nail on the head when you said, have a conversation. Start talking.
Yeah. And it was a great conversation to have, because then for me, it's, well, why do you think that? And then that's what opened up the dialogue between a group of people that had predominantly people who were, you know, Biden and Harris. But I'm sure it had to have at least a few Trump-Pence individuals in there. And then having that conversation was fantastic, because it depends on how you relate things. If you say, I see this man not bash white supremacists and condone, at least in non-action, the practices of people who would think they're superior to others based off of skin color, then if you affiliate with that person, then I also assume that you think that you're the same way, because you're saying that's okay. And if that's how you're perceiving it, then of course, every time you see that sign, that's just
it triggers.
Yeah,
it triggers. It really does. Well, I mean, I most of my entire neighborhood, I'm probably the only Democrat on my street, and I have found that once you start talking with people and expressing yourself, and they see that, yeah, you're an immigrant, but you work hard, you give back, you pay your taxes, you're just like us, then you could reach that person. But I find this last 4 years, people have been so hesitant to open up to others. How can we as society heal a divided nation and start that conversation?
When we stop looking at those who deserve inclusion from a perspective of their worth, like, oh, to your point, you said, oh, well, you work hard and you do this, so you're okay. You get the benefit of the doubt because you do these things, not because you're human, but because of all the things that I am stating that says if you meet these qualifications. And really the only qualification that should breed, that should disqualify somebody from inclusion safety is physical harm. Like if there's a physical danger that you bring to the table, then you should not be inclusive in my environment. But if there's no physical danger that's there, it makes no sense that we put these standards up. It's what we do. But when you say, how can we get past it? It's when we change our mindset.
Right.
And the mindset isn't about, well, because you do these things, you're one of the good ones. On our show, that was a huge conversation that we had where it's a struggle, especially with Black and African Americans, when they get accepted into circles and then get told you're accepted because you're one of the good ones.
Yeah, you become like token.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember when I ran for office in 2018, a good friend of mine said, well, I like you, but I'm not going to vote for you. And I said, well, gee, I was just at your house last week. But then again, I said, well, you know what? I appreciate your honesty. Tell me why you're not voting for me. And she said, because I'm pro-life and you're pro-choice. And I said, well, I am pro-choice because I believe that after a child is born, there are life issues that you have to face head on. That child needs a place to live, needs an education, needs loving parents. That child needs affordable health care, and the parents need a good job. So you wouldn't vote for me because you think that I'm pro-choice, but I'm actually pro-family and pro-child. And she said, well, I didn't think about it that way. I said, well, do I have your vote? And she says, no, I just can't do it. So here's the thing. How do you get someone to open up their mind and think? Because every little baby that's born grows into an adult with issues or who needs help in some way. And we were talking earlier about wealth. Some people are born into wealth and it makes it a little bit easier for them. But what about the ones who are born and there is no wealth?
So this conversation has been an interesting one between me and a few of my colleagues because, you know, in my opinion, I think there's a difference between pro-life and pro-birth.
Yes.
You know, at times when I see people who claim that they're pro-life, it's up until the child is born and then it's on its own. You know, good luck.
if they could put that child to work,
yeah,
they would.
Oh, yeah, well, but I don't care about policies or things that are put into play. As a matter of fact, I've even seen somebody who's extraordinarily pro-life be against policies that would help single mothers or people who are coming from underserved and impoverished areas be able to take care of the child better. And I've called them out on it as being contradictory. If you're saying you're pro-life, when does that life, you know, end? Like, when does your pro of that life end?
Yes.
Is it once the child
is born? Oh, that's a good way of saying it. There's a pro of that life, right?
Yeah.
So, when does the pro stop and the anti begin?
Yeah. But, right? You know, it's the single issue voter conversation. And I think that it's extraordinarily dangerous to put all your eggs in one basket in almost anything in life. And because then people can manipulate you extraordinarily easy. If I know that that's all you genuinely care about, that's all I have to say, well, I can do anything else.
But why? People use the same Bible, right? The African-Americans, the Caucasians, the Indians, everyone I know uses the same Bible. And the same Bible teaches you to be thy brother's keeper in thoughts, words, and actions. So when does it stop that people stop caring? Because, like you said, we should have the conversation. So if you're speaking to someone that says, I'm pro-life, you should be able to build on that conversation with the person and say, tell me why you're pro-life. And then you should be able to say, well, are you adopting a child? How are you helping the child once it's born? How come people don't take that one step further and start talking about the life issues for that child?
It's because it's easier to not do so. We have so many, and this is all my opinion, by the way. We all have so many things that we have to do in life. We got to find a way to pay the bills, to put food on the table, and we're going to hold certain issues to be important to us, which I completely and utterly understand. But action behind those issues, that takes a lot of time, energy, and effort that not everybody has. So we have the groupthink mentality where this is my group. They think a lot like me, and it's my circle, so I'm going to run with them because that's a little bit easier. Our brain is wired to try to avoid danger as much as humanly possible. So it's very easy to identify and get yourself in with an in-group according to your brain, and say, hey, here's who I'm going to roll with, because quite frankly, it makes my life easier and it's less challenging. And it's, you know, at times often used as a scapegoat. Like, hey, I'm going to vote this way. By the way, I don't think every single issue voter is a single issue voter. I think it's easy to say it's your single issue so that you don't have to answer to any of the other issues.
It's kind of like a cult mentality, actually.
Yeah.
It's like a cult. You just follow.
If I said this president completely and utterly just gave a pass to white supremacists, and you say, yeah, I hear that, but he's against abortion. I'm like, that's two different conversations, and it gives you the scapegoat to not have to answer to the other part of what the president did. And that's a tactic, whataboutism. That's a Soviet tactic from the past. And it cracks me up because it's used way too much by, typically at times, by people who claim to be like pro all-American, American. And then they have this whatabout tactic. So when we do our show, you know, we have a rule. Our rule is simple. We always try to have both sides of the conversation. However, there's two rules. A, one, you have to be respectful. And B, you're not allowed to say what about. So if we're talking about an issue, you have to stay on that issue. If we're talking about Barack Obama, we stay on him. We're talking about Donald Trump, we stay on him. You can't say what about him.
So who determines the topics for your show? Because your show is called We Are Not Okay.
Correct. We Are Not Okay. Airs every other Wednesday on Facebook and YouTube. And there's a group of individuals. We get together every Monday and we talk about, we take a look at what's happening in the news today and say, what's a good conversation to have? So we invite different Black and African Americans from around the country to come on live and just pretty much share their perspective of how they feel about what's happening.
What are some of the upcoming topics for your shows? Like, what are you guys working on now?
So we go live this Wednesday. We will be talking about a local case here around Gregory Edwards, which is interesting because this is going to be, again, it's not just local people here. It's people from around the country. So the story has made itself national. We will be talking about Utah and the slavery exemption that they just voted against, that 177,000 people still thought it would be a good idea to have. And then Sita, you will be very interesting in this. I believe the main topic for our show is going to be about forgiveness. And is forgiveness a tool that's keeping the oppressed and the marginalized down?
Well, you know me, I'm a forgiving person.
I know.
I believe in it. I think every day you wake up and you're breathing and you're able to give back to society is a good day. And if something terrible happened, you have to find a way to forgive. Because when you forgive, you're actually forgiving yourself first.
Now, but when you forgive, and this is part of the conversation, does it take away the accountability from those who...
No, it doesn't. I don't think it does. When you forgive for yourself for healing.
Okay.
But the other person that you are forgiving, they still have that responsibility to make it right. You have to make things right. We all have a functioning brain, right? We know what's right and we know what's wrong. And sometimes you just have to look into your own soul and you'll know what you did wrong.
And I agree with you from the spiritual perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But right and wrong today, especially feels more like, is a truth that really is just something that we either all agree on or we don't. You know, one of the things I teach is that truth is the ultimate agreement. Like, we all say R-E-D spells red, so it spells red. That's because we all agree it. But if you have enough people believe something else, the truth does change, and we've seen that. So... I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope you can tune in on Wednesday.
I will definitely try.
I have people from who have two completely different perspectives in that conversation, and I'm in the middle, you know.
I will tune in because, you know what, like Diwali, for example, or holiday, it is a time when you reflect on your own behaviors and what you can do going forward to change your life and the life of others for the betterment, right? And so sometimes there are family members who are squabbling, whether it's over politics or whether some people fight over land, house, money, whatever. And it's up to you to sit down and say, well, how important is that person in my life? Do I want that person back in my life? And somebody has to make the first step to reach out. Because if everybody decided that they were not going to be that person to reach out, what are we going to do? I mean, I work in long-term care and I've seen so many people leave this planet in a body bag, and they did not reconcile with their children, their family, and their friends because of something that happened years ago that people feel like they're just too big and they're better than the other person to reach out and say, hey, I'm sorry. I think it makes such a difference if somebody could just say those two words, I'm sorry. Because it really moves mountains, you know? And I've seen it in my professional life and I've seen it in my personal life, you know? And I think America needs that too right now. Somebody to say, hey, we're sorry. We're sorry we spread so much hate. We're sorry we're spreading so much fear. We're sorry we spread division. Like, I listen to some of the people on Fox News and I swear, I wonder if they really care about this country or they just care about their own paychecks. Like, who are they really protecting and what are they promoting? You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at them, you ask yourself, like, what are you promoting, dude? Did you wake up today and you decide I'm going to tell everybody to hate black people or hate Asians or hate immigrants or hate the people who are coming for asylum? What is your beef with humanity? What are you really here on this earth for? You question yourself, though, you know?
But if they believe that hatred or that damnation of that group is in the best interest of their safety and enough people have played on that belief to them, then they're gonna continue.
But what it is so fearful of, Mr. David Jones? I wonder. Your company is called Diversity of Thought, and I'd like your thought on this. What are people so fearful of? Are they fearful of the LGBTQ community? Are they fearful of somebody whose skin color is different? Are they fearful because your religious belief is different? What is it that drives human beings to be so hateful?
The answer to all that is yes. And the science answer is the amygdala, more than likely. It's a primitive way that our brain works. Basically, our brain is designed to identify danger and to avoid it. And so we have this negative bias that almost leads us. And sometimes that can go really bad, like, I hate this group of people. And sometimes it can be, oh, if I taste something that's bitter, I think it might be dangerous, and so let me never eat that again because I don't want to be poisoned. But society advances so fast that when you take away, like, in the past, you know, if you saw an animal you didn't know, is it coming to eat our tribe? Is it a danger? If you see people you don't know, they don't speak the language, there's a danger. So our brain has always been there, but now it's, you know, like, you can take an escalator on your way to the gym. Safety is not, you know, it's like, yeah. We live in a very, very safe society, but our brain is still hardwired to operate in a way that's always looking for danger. And so at times, it can create that version of danger. It's still going to look for the difference and change and hold on to that fear, and then other people can play on to that. So when you see that mob mentality, you see that group of people that just believe wholeheartedly that something is evil or they're anti-human beings, it's one of two things. There is something inside of them that's less than, and so they're taking it out on everybody else. Or it's just the fact that there's been so many people that's played off of that older, more archaic, you know, but very strong part of the brain and says, hey, we're going to pump this out to you as much as humanly possible until you believe. And by the way, if you believe like us, we'll make it safe for you. And that sounds great. And so people just go, hey, this is what it needs to take to have safety. We need to eliminate, we need to have all the Muslims out of the country. Why? It makes no sense whatsoever. But you convince enough people, like, hey, well, there have been people who claim Islam who have attacked before. So by that stance, everybody who claims Islam must be wanting to attack, right? And that logic is so silly. It doesn't even make sense. It's illogical. There are people who are Christian who have attacked people,
yeah,
like on a day-to-day business, basis. Nobody's talking about trying to get all the Christians out of the country. So the conversation doesn't make any sense whatsoever. However, we're wired in a way that tries to find a space of feeling comfortable and safe. And whatever that is, that's the direction that people are going to go. So I think that's what you see. I do think the media hypes it up more. I think that we are more together than we are apart. I think it's good television to say that we are divided and polarized and things of that nature.
And people don't realize that some of the television shows are geared towards revenue.
Yes.
It's totally. All about dollars, you know.
Absolutely.
And I find that, you know, if you smile with people, if you make contact with them, right away it changes everything. You know, and I don't think enough people, like you say, want to put in the time and effort to have a conversation with people. But once you start conversing with someone, they say, well, you're Indian and you're from the Caribbean, but you kind of remind me of Kamala Harris. Isn't she Indian? Yes, she is. Is that why you're supporting her? No. Why are you supporting her? Because I like what her single mom did with two children and opportunities. And you start talking, they're like, oh, really? I didn't know that.
I got asked the same question about Barack. I always got the assumption, though, of, so I bet you're supporting Barack Obama, right?
Yeah.
It's like, actually, you know what was interesting is when McCain ran, I was so excited because I wanted to see Barack versus McCain until, because McCain shifted, it felt a lot once he got the nomination, and then they put Palin with him. And I said, well, the most dangerous thing is to have her that close to the presidency because she was not qualified in any way, shape, fashion, or form. Mm-hmm. It was terrifying. And so for me, it was just like, well, it's a no-brainer. But I actually really wanted to see like a strong McCain with a stronger VP candidate versus Barack, because it would have made my decision significantly more difficult.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because he was the black guy.
Well, but just keep in mind, all of this conversation is the same thing that we've said on the show a lot. Emotion and logic can't live in the same place. No. So if we get people filled up with emotion, right, logic is real hard to enter in where you can read and actually research and do a little, you know, background check and really check in with yourself and see who you are and what values mean the most to you and how you would vote specifically. But like the media and like all these things that we're talking about, when it fills your head with all that emotion, really hard to get to the logical and not be name calling and all of those things that we're seeing, witnessing people doing right,
well,
now.
It's not even about voting, though. I mean, when you think about it, you're right, yeah. Right? But it's about being a decent human being.
It's about waking up every day. Yeah.
And if you have food on your table and you have health insurance and you have a warm bed to sleep in, and you have friends and family and food and everything that go, you should want somebody else to have the same thing. It is not your business to interfere with someone else's life. But if you could help them, why not?
Right.
It's like we have lost that feeling of really and truly being our brother's keeper. You know, I read once that when you're younger and you're working and paying taxes, you are paying. So later on, when you get feeble, you're paying for the strength of others. Mm-hmm. And working in a nursing home and watching grown men lay in a bed, incontinent, unable to dress themselves, unable to feed themselves, unable to take care of their bodily functions, I noticed that they depend on the strength of other people. And most of the time, those other people who are taking care of them are immigrants from a different country, you know. And so I always tell people, don't worry, you know, when you're young and strong and you could give back, think about it, because you're giving back because you are going to need the strength of other human beings when your time comes.
Right. So David slipped me a little note here about his show, his podcast that he has going on every other Wednesday. It's No Talk, N-O-T.
Not okay.
Not okay. No Talk. That's funny. N-O-T-O-K. Not okay. Dot show.
Well, we'll give David another quick minute before we leave. Anything else you are involved in Brevard County, Florida, right now besides the radio, the Facebook live show?
Yes. So I'm now part of the board of the newly created Space Coast Black Chamber of Commerce. So I'm excited that we got that off the ground. I still work with the other chambers; they're amazing. But we're happy that we have a Black Space Coast as a Chamber of Commerce is attached to the National Chamber of Black Chamber of Commerce. There you go. And I'm happy. I'm a part of the Lee Brevard class of 2021, which will be the best class. And if you know anything about Lee Brevard, every class is the best class.
So we are going to take a quick minute to have a station break and listen to our sponsors real quick. David Jones, thank you so much for joining us today. And he's going to be hanging out for the rest of the show. And right after we come back, we'll be with Tiki Fuel.
Fuel.
Yes.
By the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a great segment we had with our friend David Jones. And now we have Tiki Fiol. Tiki is a lifelong resident of Brevard County, Florida. She was born right here in Melbourne. Boy, you were born when the hospital was still called Brevard Regional.
Correct.
And raised in the Ogalle area. And I'm going to let you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
So, yes, I was born in Brevard County back when it was not Holmes Regional. Grew up in Ogalle, went to Our Lady of Lourdes. I'm the first generation born of Cuban immigrants. We were raised very Catholic, so I went to Our Lady of Lourdes for kindergarten through eighth grade, and then Melbourne Central Catholic. I then graduated with a psychology degree from University of Central Florida and a master's degree from Florida Institute of Technology in Applied Behavior Analysis.
And right now, that's quite a mouthful. Wonderful. And so right now, you're the current president of the Association for Behavior Analysis of Brevard.
Correct.
So tell us exactly what is ABA. I like the way it sounds, ABA. Ellen and I met at ABWA. Yeah. So ABA.
You want to know about the association or behavior analysis in general?
Tell us about the association, and then we'll talk about the analysis.
Okay, so ABAB, or the Association for Behavior Analysis of Brevard, is a subchapter of the Florida Association for Behavior Analysis. We work on the dissemination of behavior analysis through education, parent training. We also do volunteer work. We provide continuing education to behavior analysts that can maintain their certification at various levels. And it's a lot of community outreach, socialization. So our behavior analysts that work across different environments do have an organization, a common tie that binds.
So, you know, we all talk about behaviors, right? And I, for one, have always believed that if you want to change our world, you change your behaviors and the environment in which we live.
Correct.
So can you expand on that? Because a lot of people want to change their behaviors, but it really cannot be done unless you change the environment.
Correct. So as a behavior analyst, we're looking at the science. We want to improve the human condition through behavior change procedures. We generally are trying to teach individuals or their families how to rearrange the environment, how an individual, let's say someone has a very disruptive, dangerous, or challenging behavior. It could be unsafe, it could be illegal. How do we change that? So as a behavior analyst, we come in and try to determine what the function or the reason for the behavior is. So if we determine the function or the reason, what's the opposite side of that coin? If someone's engaging in aggressions because they want to eat lunch, why would we not then teach them, if we understand the function, this is how we make lunch, this is how we get lunch, this is how we can get someone else's attention to help provide us with that food. So we look at behaviors almost as a way to communicate. There's a function, there's a reason. How do we teach this individual, or more so their families, their teachers, their circle of supports, how do we rearrange that environment so the behaviors that we want to see more often occur and pay those off? It's about efficiency and effectiveness. If it's quicker for me to get lunch by stealing it versus waiting, making, having to find someone, having to open maybe a very difficult jar to open, it's easier for me to snag it, eat it, be done with it than it is as the other people that are more in control of the environment. If we can ease those other variables, that individual can engage in behaviors that are more safe, that are more socially appropriate, that still get their wants and needs met.
That they don't have to work as hard for.
Exactly.
Exactly what David was talking about earlier. That's why I said you two are a good fit for the show today. So how can our listeners learn more about ABA and how it may benefit themselves or their families or someone that they know is having a behavioral issue right now?
So the first thing I would suggest is to learn more about ABA is to go to our board certification system to learn more about it. That is the Behavior Analyst Certification Board at BACB.com. Once there, you can learn more about ABA, the training that's required, the levels of certification, how long it takes for someone to get their education, to get their hours, to be able to sit for the certification exam, which is a very, very difficult procedure. They can also get additional information here in Florida at the Florida Association for Behavior Analysis, which is fabaworld.org, and locally, again, is the ABAB group on Facebook.
So people have weird behaviors, right? And we have seen, we're watching people right now in our world who are about power and control. They're also about being a bully. They're also about spreading lies, hate, division. So are all these things part of behavior?
So Ellen made a very interesting comment at the beginning of the show that she had noticed on her social media feeds that people are behaving a little better. I want to back it up one step. So anything a person says or does is behavior. So we're always behaving, whether it's on social media, it's you and I sitting next to each other talking, driving our cars, waking up with the alarm, taking a sip of water, that technically that's all behaviors. What we want to kind of discern when we break this down at smaller or more, let's say, molecular levels, is the behavior socially appropriate or is it socially inappropriate? So is it safe or is it unsafe? Is it illegal or legal? So when we look at behavior, we want to be very specific. We say, oh, they're behaving this way. Well, what exactly do you mean? In what instance are we talking about the social significance of that behavior? What direction are we going to in this conversation? And then we bring it back to function. What's the function? What's the reason? David had some interesting points. He had talked about how someone had tasted something bitter, and then it made them sick, so they avoid something bitter in the future. So as a behavior analyst, we would think they tasted maybe a novel stimulus. It made them ill. It made them sick. Through that pairing, they then, what we call generalize, they generalize this stimulus that used to be novel is now aversive. It's dangerous. So I have to avoid that. In that very, very small instance or that example, let's take that to a bigger level. I have had a run-in with an individual, or I have had a run-in like with a car. I've had a very bad car accident. The car was red. I may then be scared of red vehicles.
Right.
It was a very bad car.
It just stays
accident.
In your brain.
Until we then...
It's lodged.
How do we... But then here's the important part. As a behaviorist, how do we unpair that? So we can present other stimuli without something... Without an aversive event happening, right? Have you ever heard of someone who's afraid of spiders? Someone who's afraid...
Frogs. And snakes.
Okay, so we may present things in very small ways and show you the frog didn't hurt you, the snake didn't hurt. We may start with pictures, then we may go to a plastic animal or a frog in a jar, and eventually the frog is out, until it's been presented so many times that there's no aversive event. It's not going
to
hurt you.
So you teach them not to be afraid of that.
In essence, yes.
Right. But you know, our show is fun and it's very unscripted, right? And we try to educate people. But think about when you're small, right? You're a small child and your parents take you to a store or they take you to a wedding. I'm speaking like from the Indian people, right?
Yeah.
They'll say, well, before we leave the house, you have that talk with the parents, right?
Right,
and they say, now, do not let me down. Be on your best behavior. And to us children, that meant... Don't run, don't jump, don't run around a people's house, don't talk loud, don't get involved in big people's conversation. And then your parents reward you if you went and your behavior was up to mark. So then are they then teaching you at that point in your life the value of behavior?
So in that example you gave, be on your best behavior. You did much better than most people would say. You specified what the parent wanted. Don't run, don't yell,
use
an inside voice. Then when you say we reward the person, what you want to do is reward the behaviors you want to see, right? So when they are using an inside voice, praise them specifically for the inside voice.
Right.
How then does an individual know, oh, that's the thing that gets me mom's attention? if the kid actually mows the lawn the way they want it and they really like $10, you give them the $10 right away. It has to be very close. You want to, what we call, reinforce or increase that behavior in the future. So if we are attending more in all of our lives, if we are attending more to the behaviors we want to see more of, if we want to see our neighbor engage in appropriate conversation with us, when they're in those appropriate conversations, we want to give them whatever we think that they really like, attention. Come by and drop off some, you know, if they really like a certain food, bring it by and say, hi, and I had a really good conversation with you. Let's follow that up another day.
Right.
What do you want to see more of? That's what you pay off.
Right. So that's a reward.
Correct.
Right. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, how does ABA work? And describe the different locations, ages, approaches, etc.
So in ABA, we are the applied scientists. We're the applied practitioners. So typically a family, let's say of a child or a young adult or even an adult, let's say we get a referral, a four-year-old child just recently diagnosed on the spectrum, and there are some concerns that they have. They would contact their local agency or their local ABA provider. They would get whatever information is required by the insurance. Each insurance changes. Once all of that is set up, the behavior analyst goes to their home, or they would bring their child to a clinic or a school. They do what's called a functional behavior assessment. And they have some questions. They might be running probes. They might be running some very specific tests. They want to find out what's the behaviors of concern. What are the deficits? So remember what we talked about before. Let's talk function. So if someone has a behavior that's very, let's say, headbanging, they're hitting their head, they're hurting themselves, that's social significance, right? That's dangerous. That individual could hurt themselves. It's very difficult for parents to see that. So we look at what's the function of the behavior. Why are they banging their head? So we come up with our hypothesis. If we understand the function, hopefully, then we come up with what do we want them to do instead to get their wants and needs met? We develop a plan. We train. The biggest part here is, yes, we work directly with that child, but we teach the family members, if everybody implements this correctly and we reinforce or strengthen the behaviors we want to see more often, naturally the headbanging or whatever our dangerous or challenging behavior is going to fall off, because they get their wants and needs met through the appropriate behaviors that we have
rewarded. Like a care plan. You have a care plan.
That's exactly it. So the care plan is implemented. We train the family.
Goal-oriented.
We do direct.
It's goal-oriented.
And our job, and this, whenever I open a new case, parents laugh at me, but my job is to get myself fired. I want to be fired because that means that family or that foster care, the parents can do it without me, and that means I get to go work with the next family down the street.
Right. And it sounds like you're an extension of the parents' arms.
Yes.
You're helping them, right?
Yes.
So does insurance cover this? Because I remember that was how you and I met. We were talking on Facebook about, does Medicaid cover this or private insurance?
Each insurance, what I would tell a family member that is looking, that has these needs, is check with your insurance provider. Some have very specific rules. Medicaid does cover this, and it covers it for many diagnoses, not just individuals on the autism spectrum. There is a procedure that has to be done with Medicaid. You would need to have what's called a comprehensive diagnostic evaluation that's completed by a licensed individual. So you would get the diagnosis. If the diagnosis is appropriate for behavior analysis, then the physician would order, they would request that information. It's sent to whatever provider you choose. And then that process of going in, doing the functional assessment, coming up with that behavior program training, and then getting ourselves fired, that's the rest of that progression.
It's awesome. Do you have any friends in Tallahassee that's trying to legislatively help?
So I am the president-elect of the Florida Association for Behavior Analysis.
Pleased to meet you, my dear.
Oh, thank you very much.
Madam.
No important Madam people.
We are working legislatively through our political action committee to continue to not only disseminate behavior analysis, but to ensure that we're moving forward so all individuals can access it. Recently, we did have some success in last year's legislative session that we passed HB 731, which was signed by Governor DeSantis. It provided an exemption for behavior analysts. The Agency for Healthcare Administration had a requirement that for licensure. Behavior analysis is not a licensed service provision under ACA at this time, although we would love it because then we have some different things we can do. Our practice was then not going to be able to continue unless we had licensure or someone that had no training in ABA oversee us. So that was pretty difficult. So we were lucky with that. We did, Governor DeSantis did sign that. The next piece of big legislation we're looking at is registered behavior technicians. They are kind of like our frontline workers, right? They are a registered individual that goes in and does the bulk or the majority of the work with the individuals that we work for and the families that we see. Currently, our Florida statutes do not allow for registered behavior technicians to go work within our public schools. So years ago, Florida statutes 490 and 491 and 393.17, we do have a definition of applied behavior analysis in our statutes. We do have the governing board, which is the BACB, which I discussed earlier. There was no such thing as a registered behavior technician when ABA was included in the law. So the spirit of the law and the letter of the law have grown, or the spirit of the law has not grown as well as the letter of the law has. We are really trying to push that RBTs be allowed to provide this medically necessary service in whatever environment the child needs. And if that's within a school that they can assist,
then why not?
Then why not?
Right.
We were successful here in Brevard County. We went to several school board meetings, and they did overturn their ban.
Yeah.
So we have been working. Last year, we were within one vote. So we missed it by one vote. So in our upcoming legislative session, we're going to try it again.
And, well, before we go, I mean, segments go so quickly. Oh, gosh. And such interesting conversations. COVID-19, it's challenging as a nurse. It's challenging as a human. How challenging is it for you all to try to help people with behavior right now?
It is very difficult. So many providers have come up with different or unique ways to do it. If you're in a school, then you're going to follow some different guidelines versus if your practice leads you into their home or into their community. We follow a lot of the same medical guidelines, taking temperatures, asking the same questions. We may shift so you have less individuals with your home for less exposure. We also are pushing legislatively or working with the Agency for Healthcare Administration to come up with telehealth. How can we use telehealth if it's not safe to go into the home, but the family is benefiting or needs these services? Because behavior analysts aren't licensed, only licensed individuals can provide telehealth. So again, there's that catch 22 that our science worked, right?
Yeah.
So, but ACA has been very good at working with FABA to come up with some plans during this, you know, COVID-19 crisis.
Right. You also were witness in a Medicaid fraud case?
Yes, I...
Well, thank you, because us taxpayers appreciate people like you.
Absolutely. I am a contracted ABA expert witness working with the state attorney's office so that when there are arrests, we can review the files and then, you know, the state would decide if they're going to proceed with criminal charges or how that would go going to court. Now, I will add here again, if we were licensed, the Department of Health could serve someone and they would cease being able to provide services.
Gotcha.
Just like if someone was a licensed mental health counselor, just like someone's a licensed nurse.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is licensed, the Department of Health can serve them and it stops. Currently, our certification board and lack of licensure were stuck until someone is actually found guilty.
I see. Wow. We learned so much on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Ellen.
Too, it's amazing.
So when you have free time, Miss Tiki Fio, you volunteer with the Surface for Action.
Surface for Autism.
For Autism. Paul, how much time do we have?
4 minutes.
Oh, good. Good. I want to hear a little bit about Surface for Autism.
So they're a nonprofit organization. I think this year they couldn't do it, obviously, because of COVID. But I believe it's 11 years now they've been running. They go all over the state and sometimes parts of Georgia, and it's just a group of surfers that come together and have individuals on the spectrum teach them how to surf. They bring them out on a board, you know, where there's a lot of us that are volunteers. We assist them. I have seen kids that were what we would call nonverbal, so they don't use spoken words to communicate, start saying words right after a session. Families love it. It's a good way to get the community to come together. There's other community providers, maybe speech and OT, physical therapy. There's a lot of other providers that come together, and it does allow for another option to have a kid in their family or a young adult in their family learn some different skills, learn some different activities that they can then take home and do as a family.
Yeah.
I mean, in Brevard County, we got 72 miles of beach. Wouldn't you be able to love to take your kid out and have a new skill, something different to do? And there's lots of organizations in our county that are working on these types of things and throughout our state.
Right. So I know we still have like a minute left. So I want to ask you a question. We talked a little bit, 2 minutes. This word inclusion. I have found that when you include people in anything you're doing and you stop the bullying, it makes a better society. Talk to our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on WWBC. I should say or dial sometime, AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. That word inclusion, speak to that word for us. Tell our audience how you feel about that word inclusion.
So in what I do every day in life, we work with some individuals that maybe are not able to fully participate in their community, in their school, maybe in their church. If we can teach better skills for families, if we can teach better skills in our community, if we can teach better acceptance, some better understanding, if an individual can become a bigger and broader and more important part of their community, they give back just as much as the person that has lots of money and lots of abilities.
Yeah.
There's lots of different ways we can bring everyone together and allow them to participate and be part of our community and be one of our neighbors just like everyone else. Just because someone has a different diagnosis or a different ability or even a different way they look, sound, talk, or not, a different way they ambulate or their mobility, they should still be able to participate. They should still fully be able to provide and give back to the community just as much.
Right. So what I'm hearing is that you're saying that we all need to be educated on
Agreed.
These things.
Absolutely.
So it always comes down to an education.
Yes.
When you educate people, you can have a society that's flourishing.
That Absolutely.
Where everyone gets a seat at the table. And I'd like to bring you back one day because I want to do a show about the importance of a kitchen table. Why is it so important? If you don't have a kitchen table, maybe you just have a stool like we did. My father just built something makeshift. But conversations around a kitchen table with a family can include not just your family members, but the entire world.
Yes.
Because when you talk at the kitchen table, you're talking about things that are going on around the nation, in your home, in your community, right? So give us a website one more time for your business or both of the businesses.
So
you're sponsoring today's show for...
My business is sponsoring this.
Right.
So my company webpage is behaviorcounts.com for our private side, but Florida Association for Behavior Analysis is fabaworld.org.
And we've put all of that on our Facebook page. And once again, Sita, thank you so much for another fantastic week of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. These fantastic guests, thank you so much, David Jones and Tiki Feel.
Correct.
Got it. Have a wonderful week, folks. We'll see you next Monday.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.